The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
112 Ministers Awards for Leadership in Crime Prevention. Therefore, be it resolved that all members of the House of Assembly congratulate Constable Arnold on receiving one of the 2012 Ministers Awards for Leadership in Crime Prevention and thank her for her continued work in the community. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 3 p.m. and we will finish at 4:30. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Speaker, earlier today we heard that Bowater is planning two temporary shutdowns in the near future, one between May 6th to May 21st and another between June 17th and July 2nd. Mr. Speaker, we understand these shutdowns are due to a lack of orders by the mill. Now, Mr. Speaker, we've already seen that this mill has been shut down for 7 weeks of 20 weeks since the Premier made his announcement on December 2nd. So my question for the Premier, what ongoing talks is the Premier having with Resolute and Bowater about the future of this mill?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there is in place, of course, an arrangement for the continued operation of the mill. The fact of the matter is that downtime has been rotating through the Resolute family of mills, trying to deal with a lack of orders. Most of that has to do with what's going on in Europe and with the euro. The reality is that you have mills there that, because of the difficulties that they're having, are now bidding into the same marketplace. The Leader of the Opposition should know is that there is a good plan for that mill going forward. It includes a series of improvements that were negotiated as part of the overall package. Those have not as yet been put into effect.
Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the series of things that the Premier talks about going in place in that mill has nothing to do with diversification, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the original deal that we talked about in this House late November, early December, the total package was around $90 million, $50 million of which, $23 million was for land, another $25 million was for the upgrades to that mill that the Premier is talking about. There was an additional $40 million that was set aside that was available for Resolute to draw on or to use or the province to purchase land. My question for the Premier, what mechanism in place to trigger the use of that $40 million by Resolute?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, that we reserve the right, if we decided, to be able to purchase more property of high value, but in fact no decision like that has been made. That would be a decision that we would make. What I can say is that there is a good future for that mill once those efficiencies are put in place. What it will do is make it a lower cost, a higher productivity mill, but that, as was pointed out by the Leader of the Opposition, the agreement was signed not that long ago. There are engineering requirements. There is pre-work that needs to be done in order to be able to make those changes happen. In fact, even in large kinds, large mechanisms like we're talking about, there would be even ordering that would take time in order to ensure that you had access to the machinery that you wanted.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, with the announcement of the pending shutdowns coming up, that will be a third of the time this mill will be closed from December until July. In the Premier's previous answer, he acknowledged that it's, in fact, the province who will trigger whether or not they purchase more land and hand more money over to Resolute for that mill. My final question to the Premier. If the Premier deems that it's necessary to trigger for that $40 million, will he at least ensure that that money is being spent in the province of Nova Scotia for Nova Scotia workers and not those in Quebec?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the purchase of land in Nova Scotia stays, means the value of that expenditure stays in Nova Scotia for generations, Mr. Speaker, to be enjoyed by all Nova Scotians. I would say this. It's clear that for the Leader of the Opposition, the glass is one-third empty instead of being two-thirds full.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Ontario's doctors have been in contract talks with their government since February. But, Mr. Speaker, those talks broke off yesterday. In Ontario, that government is not allowing a labour dispute in the healthcare sector to disrupt the healthcare services that Ontarians need. And I will quote from the Ontario Ministry of Health, "We will try to find a negotiated settlement," the health minister there said, "but if we can't reach an agreement, then yes, we will have to act unilaterally," and I will table that quote for the benefit of the Premier and the government. My question to the Premier is, why won't the Premier of this province provide Nova Scotians with the same assurance that their health care here will not be interrupted the same way that the government of Ontario is doing for its citizens?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, I would note that in the statement that was just read by the Leader of the Conservative Party, he noted that the government observed a process that was ongoing and apparently didn't comment on it until after the contract talks had actually broken down. So, Mr. Speaker, that seems like a reasonable thing.
Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what would have been more reasonable is to have a plan in place before surgeries were canceled, before outpatient clinics were closed, before diagnostic imaging tests were halted, before real beds were closed, because the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, that as of today at Capital Health, 430 surgeries have been canceled. 1,947 outpatient clinic hours have been lost. 530 diagnostic imaging tests have been canceled, and 172 beds are now closed. And each day that goes by that the Premier stands by and crosses his fingers and hopes for the best, another 130 to 150 surgeries are going to be canceled. These are the real stories of real Nova Scotians that are going on right now in this province, and those people are looking to their Premier to take action like the Premier of Ontario is doing for his own citizens. So my question to the Premier is, if not now, then when will the Premier do the right thing and assure Nova Scotians that their government will act to keep their surgeries going, to keep those clinics open, to open up those hospital beds? If not now, when?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there is a process of collective bargaining underway. What I can say is that the commitment that we have is to make every effort to reach a negotiated settlement, as was said, I believe, in the statement that he read from Ontario. And, Mr. Speaker, there's no question that that's a difficult process. It is a difficult position for, I think, not only for the government, but for the workers. They, after all, went into those professions because they care about the patients that they look after. And so we recognize that they are very likely conflicted about this situation. We understand it, and we have taken on the responsibility of balancing all of those interests. Yes, Mr. Speaker, that can be difficult.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, of course a negotiated settlement is always preferable. Everybody agrees with that. But the Premier in his answer expressed concern for how hard it is on the Capital District management, how hard it is on the government, how hard it is on the workers themselves. All of that is true, but what he left out was the very patients who we're asking about, who he was elected to represent, who have real surgeries that are being cancelled, who have real outpatient needs, who have real diagnostic testing needs. They're the ones that we're asking the Premier to stand up for today. Of course, a negotiated settlement is preferable. Of course, we all hope that that happens. But when you're the Premier of Nova Scotia, hoping for the best is not enough. And so my final question to the Premier is, as we are now hours away from a deadline, what is his plan to assure Nova Scotians that his government will be there to make sure their surgeries happen and that their health care needs are met?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, throughout this process, the government has ensured at every step that it has been there to provide the services that were required to try and get the parties to reach an appropriate collective agreement. We appointed a very, very well-respected mediator to carry out help the parties get to the table and to get back at negotiations. It is a process, and I don't diminish for one second how difficult it is, and I don't diminish for one second how difficult it is on the patients. What I can say is that Capital Health has made every effort to ensure that any inconvenience has been minimized, that where they could move things around so that they could be dealt with in preference, they have done that.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians trust their doctors. They trust them to diagnose, they trust them to treat ailments, and they trust them to support them in their time of need. But what happens, Mr. Speaker, when doctors order blood tests only to have blood work not analyzed because the same identical test was ordered to the same patient within the last 4 months? Mr. Speaker, according to a recent article in the Chronicle Herald, this happened in the Capital Health 18,083 times in 2011. So my question through you to the Premier, could the Premier explain to Nova Scotians how the lab is able to override the health care decisions made by our family doctors?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, what I can say is that the professionalism of the technicians and of the healthcare professionals in our system is designed to make sure that the patients throughout Nova Scotia get absolutely the best quality of service. The decisions that are made reflect those protocols and standards of practice.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the decisions that are being made are a direct reflection of the decisions this government has made around health care. District health authorities are having to respond. Mr. Speaker, I understand, and we all understand, the need for the health care system to be efficient. However, there's a question of ordering too many tests, Mr. Speaker. Then the system should speak directly to those physicians that they believe are overusing the system and not jeopardize the health of Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, John McMillan from Sydney had his oncologist order blood work. And despite some administrative errors and the fact that the blood work requested came from Nova Scotia Cancer Centre, should always be processed, his blood work wasn't. So Mr. McMillan was sent for blood work again for the second time. So twice the cost to the system, and sadly, Mr. Speaker, his cancer has returned. So my question to the Premier, how can the Premier claim that his NDP government's cut to health care hasn't impacted patient care when clearly it has?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, very simply, there have been no cuts to laboratory services. As I said, these people who are doing this are professionals. They perform their jobs according to protocols and standards that are entirely appropriate. And of course, I can't speak to any particular case, but what I can say is that those standards that they would see in our hospitals would reflect the same standards that you would find, I would suggest, anywhere in the country.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, no one in this House has questioned the professionalism and the ability of people working in our labs, Mr. Speaker, nor has anyone in this House questioned the professionalism of doctors across this province. What we have, though, is a healthcare professional, a doctor, ordering to have tests done being overridden by another healthcare provider because there's been a directive sent from the District Health Authority to make that happen. Without any discussion, Mr. Speaker, with the doctor to find out why those tests were being ordered. Mr. Speaker, any doctor that I know doesn't just order a test for the sake of order, and they do it because they care about their patients and they're looking for as much information as possible to give the proper diagnosis and to provide the proper care for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we could find a half a million dollars to buy school lunch bags. We could find $500 million, Mr. Speaker, on corporate welfare. Mr. Speaker, we could find over $500,000 to tell Nova Scotians that they can get better care sooner, Mr. Speaker. Yet they're denying blood work tests if they've already been tested within the last 4 months, Mr. Speaker, to save less than $400,000 and put the care of Nova Scotia in jeopardy, Mr. Speaker. So my final question to the Premier, how can the Premier tell John McMullen and the countless others who've had their tests not processed that they are getting better care sooner?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the one thing we don't do is to try and set clinical standards by political people. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the clinical standards are set by healthcare professionals, Mr. Speaker, and as I've said, I certainly have complete faith on them carrying out their jobs appropriately.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to health care, Nova Scotians are concerned about two things: wait times and accountability. For the past 8 years, Nova Scotia has been the beneficiary of two pots of money dedicated to wait times, $151 million in a wait times reduction fund, and another $24.2 million for a patient wait time guarantee trust, sum total $175.2 million. While this may not seem like a lot of money vis-a-vis the health care budget, it is dedicated funding which is to be used to address wait times. My question to the Premier, where can Nova Scotians go online to find an all-encompassing report and strategy on how and where these dollars were and will be spent?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, of course, thank the member opposite for his question. I would ask that you direct the question to the Minister of Health.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. Mr. Speaker, there is an agreement that all provinces made with the federal government with respect to wait time guarantees in five areas. And this province has worked very hard, has struggled, in fact, to meet wait time guarantees in some areas. But, Mr. Speaker, the area that we do have recognition right across the country for being the leader in is in our reporting of wait time guarantees. We, in fact, have the most comprehensive website reporting waits on those guarantees of any province in the country, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are waiting. They deserve to know which surgeries or treatments are the priority of this government. Beyond the catchphrase, better care sooner, Nova Scotians waiting for health care deserve to know who will be actually getting better sooner and when. The province of Manitoba, back in 2006, produced both a report on the health care services and where the money was to be spent. Ironically, the report was called Working for Better Health Care Sooner. There is irony here, Mr. Speaker. While Manitoba was working for better health care sooner, Nova Scotians are still waiting. Could the Premier please indicate when his government will produce a similar report for Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm glad to see that the member opposite recognizes that good work, in fact, is being done with respect to wait times. But, Mr. Speaker, I would ask that you direct the question to the Minister of Health.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I indicated, Nova Scotia has been recognized by both the federal government and all of the other provinces for having the most comprehensive wait time reporting system of any of the provinces in the country. And notwithstanding what the minister or what the member has had to say about Manitoba, we provide very comprehensive information on the waits, particularly in those five areas where we have agreements with the federal government under the health accord. And just to remind members, those areas are in diagnostic services, in cancer treatment such as radiation services, in cardio, in cataract surgery, and in orthopedics.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Despite investments out of the five national priorities for wait times just mentioned by the Minister, we are meeting one of them, coronary artery bypass graft. Hip replacement wait time, a year and a half in Halifax, which, by the way, Mr. Speaker, due to the NDP's delay in appointing a mediator, will get worse, not better. And vascular surgery, 224 days in the Valley, 78 days in Cape Breton. Given that they are 3 years into their mandate, can the Premier tell us when we can expect some sort of plan which will address surgical wait times?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Minister of Health has already pointed out, we have underway a comprehensive plan with respect to those wait times. They are in fact working well and has been recognized by the federal government and, in fact, by other provinces. And, in fact, Mr. Speaker, what's interesting is that other provinces are paying very close attention to what's going on in Nova Scotia. As you may know, the Minister of Health has been chairing the National Committee of Ministers of Health. Wherever I have gone across the country, I have heard from other premiers their appreciation for the work of our Minister of Health.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is the Minister of Education. The review of the Chignecto Central Regional School Board 2012-2013 budget report today said, in general, the decisions made by the board seem reasonable and understandable in the context of a declining enrollment. In particular, the report notes that the board decided that elementary education is the most important component and wanted to protect those important early years of education from the sharp NDP knife. The board reasoned that lack of learning or assistance in those years is magnified in the higher grades, a concept that most educators and all Nova Scotians would agree with. So my question is, does the minister agree with the board that elementary education is the most critical component to protect in our education system?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Each and every board have their mandate, and Chignecto's mandate is laudable, and I appreciate the work that they've done around the issue of elementary education, and I know that they're going to continue to do the fine work that they're doing. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister's Budget Officer makes some specific recommended cuts to replace those proposed by the school board. They include cuts to early reading supports, such as 3.5 literacy mentors, and 8 early reading intervention positions. They also include outright firing of 8 more elementary teachers, which would cause elementary class sizes to grow. So my question is, does the minister agree with the recommendations from her budget officer, or consistent with the CCRSB's goal of protecting elementary education?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I think I want to be this to be made very clear that the retirements at the Chignecto Regional School Board are definitely in line with the issue of declining enrollment, and there will not be anybody fired. There will be people retiring from the system, and this is an opportunity for to address the declining enrollment situation in that board. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this question is to the Premier. The report concludes that the province should work with school boards on priorities before doling out arbitrary budget cuts. This is the exact opposite approach to the one that the minister has pursued this year. Nova Scotians expect their elected school boards and their elected premier to work together to protect and enhance the classroom experience, but that's not what the premier has done. He's only too happy to use our schools as backdrops and cutting ribbons and holding press conferences, but he leaves the dirty work to the school boards since cuts have to be made. Now my question is, will the premier admit now that his approach to school board budgeting has made a mess of the budgeting process and apologize to all involved and admit they were not playing games when these cuts were made?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, we were very pleased to have the work, Mr. Stewart, and his report back, and I noted in that what he said was that the school board had the science of budgeting right, but that the art of budgeting could use further reflection and consideration.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, at the present time, the wait time for diagnostic mammography in the Capital District is more than 3 months. In fact, it's 97 days. While everyone in this House agrees that Nova Scotia has one of the best provincial breast screening programs in the country, it's clear that we have a problem where diagnostic mammography comes in. For women in Metro, this is a particular concern as they have the longest wait list in the province for a test that will tell them whether or not they have cancer. My question to the Minister is, has she expressed concern about this wait time in Capital Health District for diagnostic mammography to officials in her department or to the district?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. And I'm puzzled, frankly, by the premise of the question that wait times in the Capital District for mammography are a problem, because I have met on more than one occasion with Dr. Judy Crane, who is the head of the breast cancer program for the province. This has never been raised with me as an issue or a concern. And in fact, Dr. Tom Mary, who is the dean of the medical school not so long ago, told me that I needed to get staff in my department to update the information on the department's website, because it wasn't reflecting the fact that, in fact, not only were we exceeding not only were we meeting the benchmarks for breast cancer screening, we were exceeding the benchmarks for breast cancer screening. And again, this is an area where we are a provincial leader in the area, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we just heard in the previous question about what a terrific wait times website we have. In this answer, we hear that it needs to be updated because it's not accurate. So it's not telling Nova Scotians accurately what this is what we're hearing from the Health Minister. I mean, that's a direct contradiction from the Premier's answer, and it frankly, I'm puzzled, and just as much as the Minister is. The website that is the one that has been so largely complimented today by the Premier says that it's 97 days in the Capital District for a woman to get diagnostic mammography. And because the government has been so slow to appoint arbitrators or move on the threatened strike, as of yesterday there were 530 diagnostic appointments postponed in Capital District, and some of those are bound to be mammograms as well. So we know that the wait list is getting longer as we speak. Can the minister please explain how she plans to address what amounts to a 3-month wait according to the government's website?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I think my former response addressed the inaccuracy of the information that the member used in her first question. Mr. Speaker, The department is working hard to address wait times and to meet our wait times guarantees. And as I indicated, there are five areas that the National Wait Time Guarantee program was focused on. Breast cancer mammography wasn't one of those areas that the provinces and the federal government had agreed to, but nevertheless, it's a very important area, and we do have a phenomenally successful and comprehensive screening program for breast cancer here in Nova Scotia, largely thanks to the dedication of the staff who lead that program. But I would like to indicate, Mr. Speaker, that while we still have more work to do in the five areas of wait time reduction, we are making progress, Mr. Speaker. For example, radiation therapy has increased from 62% within the benchmark in 2009. We're now at 83%. So, Mr. Speaker, I take great pride in knowing that we are moving in the right direction in terms of improving waits for important healthcare treatments.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, whether or not the diagnostic mammography is one of the five areas that the wait times have been agreed to with the federal government is of no matter to women who are waiting for these tests to be done. These wait times are really critical. They're a time of a lot of stress and concern, and they're something that should be on the minister's mind as well. And if there's inaccurate information on the website, that I think is a travesty, and the government should be embarrassed about it. So I would like to know whether my third question to the minister is whether or not you will look into the accuracy of the information, and if indeed it is 97 days for a wait in Metro, if she will do something about it.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, to be frank, I'm more concerned that women get the access to mammography in a timely fashion than the information. Although after I spoke with Dr. Marion, he brought this to my attention, I did bring it to attention of the people who manage the website in the department. And I think, again, the important point is that we are meeting the national benchmarks. We are exceeding the what is being, well, the member from Bedford doesn't think the information that I'm providing here is accurate, Mr. Speaker, but I want to...
Order, order, please. Order, please. Order. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I provided the information. The information is that we are, in fact, exceeding the recommended guidelines for the time frame in which mammography needs to be provided. I have met on more than one occasion with the head of the breast screening program for Nova Scotia. She has brought other issues to my attention requiring addressing, which my department has worked on. This has not been an area that has been raised, and I'm presuming because it's not an area where there is concern, Mr. Speaker. So I want to assure the women of the Capital District who are looking for services that they are being seen in a timely fashion, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, Egg Studios is a video production company, a successful one here in Halifax that employs 20 Nova Scotians, but those jobs are now in jeopardy. Recently, an international union, IATSE Local 849, applied to certify a small group of freelance technical workers that are occasionally used on a freelance basis by Egg Studios. The union was able to organize those freelance workers because of Bill 100 and the unique preamble that the Premier placed in Bill 100. Egg Studios themselves says that this development risks their operations here in Nova Scotia. So my question to the Premier, did the Premier intend to jeopardize small businesses and the jobs that they create and maintain, like those at Egg Studios, when he forced through Bill 100 last year?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is just misinformation. Bill 100 has nothing to do with organizing efforts on behalf of unions. This is just, you know, part of the ongoing mythology that the leader of the Conservative Party likes to try and build around that bill. But that's not what it does. In fact, what it does do is it ensures that businesses are able to continue to operate and that employees are able to continue to work.
Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier may want to read the certification decision of his own Labour Board, because the Labour Board itself identified Bill 100 and its preamble as the reason that the Labour Board was able to rely on in allowing a certification of previously freelance workers at Egg Studio. The Premier might want to read that decision and reconsider his answer. But then again, this is the same Premier that told all Nova Scotians that non-unionized employers would not be affected by Bill 100. And yet here we are, Egg Studios is a non-unionized employer, and they're being very directly affected by Bill 100. Mr. Speaker, Egg Studios is very clear. This will affect their operations because their customers, not being able to afford higher rates, will simply go elsewhere in the world outside Nova Scotia for that important piece of work. Mr. Speaker, Egg Studios doesn't have the financial resources to fight the Labour Board's ruling, the Premier's own Labour Board. So will the Premier instruct the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education to intervene on behalf of employers like Egg Studios and do a judicial review of the Labour Board's decision?
Honourable the Premier.
Now, Mr. Speaker, the decision of employees to unionize is their decision. That's their democratic right. Why would anyone intervene in such a fundamental democratic right as the right to organize?
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, again, I suggest the Premier should read the decision of his own Labour Board, because in that decision, the Nova Scotia Labour Board uniquely created a whole new classification of workers who are not dependent on one particular employer, as freelance workers are not, but only have to show their independence somehow on an entire industry. Only in Nova Scotia under the NDP has this principle now been established. So every single non-unionized employer in Nova Scotia now has to consider this new risk to their operations, which is why Egg Studios is in the position that they are in today. And so if the Premier won't accept that this is a hardship to non-unionized employers, to important employers in important industries like Egg Studios, will he at least apologize to all of those who took him at his word that Bill 100 would not affect non-unionized employers, when in fact Egg Studios proves it does?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll refer that to the Minister of Labour.
The Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, the right to unionize is a right that's guaranteed under the federal constitution. And to date, we've had nine applications to unionize. That is entirely consistent with the time period from previous years. Unlike the scaremongering of the opposition parties when that bill was under debate, there has been no big increase in applications to unionize. And certainly, we as a provincial government, we agree that the preamble to that act is something that's recognized in federal legislation as well, and there's no reason it shouldn't be recognized in provincial legislation. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, any Anytime a person receives a diagnosis for any kind of cancer, their life goes on hold. It can be pretty devastating news. And their natural instinct is to seek out a specialist to discuss treatment options. Having a plan helps cancer patients cope. But Mr. Speaker, the wait time to see a medical oncologist for breast cancer in Halifax is 54 days, and that's longer than any cancer. In Cape Breton, it's 40 days, again, longer than any other cancer, and I will table the documents from the government website showing those times. Mr. Speaker, that's not even for treatment. That's just for a referral to a specialist. So my question is to the Minister of Health. Has she expressed any concern to her officials as to why this would be the case?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the referrals to specialists in very many areas entail waiting to get access to a specialist. The system is set up to ensure that people are seen within what are called clinical guideline times. So quite often the clinical guidelines recommend that somebody be seen within a specific period of time. And to the best of our system's ability, then the various specialties attempt to organize their intake procedures to meet those guidelines in terms of when they see people, when they're provided with diagnostic testing, when they will have a specialist to read the results of a diagnosis, etc. I don't know what the clinical guidelines are for each area, not being a clinician. But certainly, we work very hard to make sure we have specialists available and they organize their workload in a way that they're able to see people in the required time, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, I'm worried about the cascading effect here in Capital District. We have a three-month wait for a diagnostic mammogram. That's 97 days. Then we have a seven-week or 54-day wait in Capital District to see a medical oncologist. That comes to a total of 151 days, almost 5 months, and to this point, that's just for a referral. That's not even treatment. So my question to the minister, can the minister please indicate to the women of Capital District how she plans to address these cascading wait times for breast cancer care?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I indicated earlier, there is a process that attempts to ensure that particularly, I mean, I think we all recognize that there's nothing more terrifying than a cancer diagnosis. And when people have referrals and they have the diagnostic testing, mammograms, and other forms of diagnostic testings like CAT scans and MRIs, the clinical staff review those tests and they make referrals and people are seen on the basis of whether a clinician thinks that the, their assessment of the cancer, where it is, how aggressive it is, and how quickly they need to be seen. And people with the greatest need are moved to the front of the line, Mr. Speaker. This is how the healthcare system is organized. It's a triage kind of system, and I'm not aware that there's any particular problem in terms of people who have breast cancer, particularly aggressive forms of breast cancer, not getting seen in a timely fashion. If the member has additional information, I'd be happy to look at it.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
So the minister is saying the government has no responsibility for wait times, and so therefore their whole slogan of better care sooner has nothing to do with them at all. Mr. Speaker, Wait times are always a concern, and when it comes to cancer, one day can seem like an eternity. Imagine 5 months without treatment, 5 months without a consult. Can the minister please indicate to the women of Capital District when she plans to address these wait times?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I indicated earlier, we have a very robust cancer program in Nova Scotia. Cancer Care Nova Scotia is phenomenal. It's led by incredible clinicians who I have met with and who work very closely in the department in terms of letting us know what their concerns are around meeting the clinical standards that they are completely committed to having in place and being able to follow through on. And the same is true for the breast cancer screening program. These clinicians are absolutely dedicated to providing the best care from the beginning of a diagnosis through to the treatment that's required when such a diagnosis is given. And I place a great deal of trust and reliance on their professionalism and expertise, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Today's school board report highlights the need to ensure that we have a quality public education system across all Nova Scotia, including our rural areas. The students there are concerned about getting a good education wherever they live in Nova Scotia. So I ask this question on behalf of Mrs. Black's grade 12 students at Spring Hill High School. My question to the Premier, what will the Premier do to ensure that every Nova Scotian gets a quality education in this province, no matter where they live?
Order, please. I think that question's out of order, asking a question about a specific class. On behalf of, you're asking the question not on behalf of the teacher, on behalf of yourself? So I'd like you to rephrase the question. You can't ask a question on behalf of the teacher.
Mr. Speaker, I ask the Premier, what is he doing to ensure a quality education for every Nova Scotian student, no matter where they live?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, what we're doing is ensuring that they have the highest per capita funding per student in history and one of the lowest student-teacher ratios in generations.
Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that sounds good, but not all schools offer the same programs. Some have IB programs, some don't. Some have band, some don't. Some have extra activities that others don't. Sadly, these are exactly the kinds of programs that are the first to get cut when school boards are faced with awful decisions about funding cuts. So my question to the Premier is, what will the Premier do to ensure all kids in Nova Scotia have an equal opportunity to get a full education, including important elements like these?
The Premier.
Mr. Speaker, boards do make decisions about programming, and the fact of the matter is that programming does differ from place to place. That's a normal part of the allocation of these resources. In some cases, there just simply isn't the demand for the course, so of course you don't offer it if there is no demand.
Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can assure the Premier that there are students at Spring Hill High who definitely have a demand for those kinds of programs, but they're the first ones that get cut when school boards like Chignecto Central have awful decisions to make about their funding. Not all schools are the same size, Mr. Speaker, but luckily the size of the school and the quality of education offered there are not always dependent on each other. And I'll give an example. Advocate District School is an example of a small rural school that has consistently achieved good academic results. Nevertheless, small rural schools are deserving of support because of their unique circumstances. My final question to the Premier, why did the Premier allow the HOG funding formula to be changed this year, eliminating the $150,000 special allowance for our small rural schools?
Honourable the Premier.
In fact, Mr. Speaker, the list was actually expanded to recognize isolated schools as well. So, in fact, the number of schools was actually increased. One of the things I would point out, Mr. Speaker, is that I happen to be one of those people who throughout my life had the opportunity to go to a rural school, and I know how beneficial the education that is offered there is to young people. But when I was going, of course, the number of students coming into those schools was increasing and increasing, increasing, and yet we still got what I considered to be quality, personalized attention. I can only imagine now that as the numbers are dropping, that teachers are dedicating even more of their time to those students individually.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The most heart-wrenching calls I receive are from parents whose children are addicted to prescription drugs. Spending all their money and resorting to stealing for pills is often a reality in Glace Bay and in many communities in Cape Breton. Kids are heating their pills and then injecting them into their veins to maximize the strength, a tragic symptom of a long-time addiction that's gone untreated. That's certainly a lot to deal with, Mr. Speaker, for an 18-year-old who hasn't even graduated from high school yet. There's a 29-day wait for the IWK Compass program, no structured treatment programs at all in Cape Breton, and the wait time for community-based programming in Sydney is the longest in the province at 62 days. So my question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, when will the Minister add resources to Cape Breton to help youth and families overcome deadly drug addictions?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, and I thank the member. He raises a very important issue and one that I know is of concern not only to members of this House but members of our community from one end of the province to the other. Mr. Speaker, this government not so long ago did a public campaign aimed at that very age group that the member referred to about the dangers, for example, of mixing prescription drugs with alcohol. And we also have the Unwasted website, and that has been reaching a lot of young people with respect to a whole variety of issues around the abuse, substance abuse, the abuse of alcohol, the abuse of prescription drugs, the abuse of other kinds of drugs. With respect to treatment programs, I know that the Director of Addiction and Treatment Services in the Cape Breton area has many ideas and has put into practice some expanded services for young people in the Cape Breton District Health Authority. But, Mr. Speaker, indeed, there is a great need in the province, including in the Cape Breton DHA, and shortly we will be unveiling the mental health and addictions strategy. And my hope is that we will be able to expand a number of programs aimed at the youth of our province.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I certainly I am aware of the ad campaign and of the website, and I can tell you honestly, I know with certainty that those initiatives, they're not reaching the kids in Glace Bay, and I can tell you that it really is a difficult thing to hear that kids, I mean, you know, you had the OxyContin issues, now we have a new drug called OxyNeo, and the change essentially results of the fact that these pills can't be broken down to be snorted or injected. So that's where we're at with these drugs. They're the kind of the decisions and the changes that manufacturers have to make to avoid some of these things. We also have Percocet, Dilaudid, and all the methamphetamines that children are getting into. And they're going downtown and they're buying these things and they're cooking them up. I mean, that's what's happening for kids that are 16, 17 years old in my community and in many communities in Cape Breton. These drug addictions are certainly difficult for the kids that they affect, but it also has a devastating effect on their families, Mr. Speaker, and that's who I hear from almost every day, and I've been speaking to a few in recent times, and it's very very difficult as an MLA to hear those things. The parents, they feel helpless to get their kids out of this dire situation, and they're losing hope. They have nowhere to turn to get help, and many parents even consider purchasing methadone off the street just as a way to get to bridge that gap between the treatment and waiting. So my question to the minister is this: what advice would the Minister of Health have for parents watching their kids battle addictions, deal with withdrawal symptoms, depression, and thoughts of suicide while they wait for 6 weeks for treatment for drug addictions?
The Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know what the member speaks of because I've worked with families that have had young people who have serious addictions. Mr. Speaker, it's a very complex problem. It's one that's not solved easily. It requires multi-prongs. It requires strong prevention and public education, the kinds of things I referred to. It also requires treatment. It requires treatment services in a timely fashion. It requires early assessment and early intervention, which I have spoken of many times, and is the direction and the focus in which this government is going with respect to treatment programs for young people. And it also includes enforcement. It includes working closely between police departments and the prescription drug monitoring program. And these are all features of the work that we are doing to improve and address addictions for youth and for young adults.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And with respect to the Minister's reply, it certainly is a complex issue, certainly is a multi-pronged approach that's required. One of those prongs, one of those pieces would be the methadone maintenance programs, for sure. And while they are beneficial and that methadone does help children and all those who battle drug addictions get through the next period, it's certainly not a cure. So I think that we can never think that methadone is the answer, but it is key for that rehabilitation process, no question. The methadone maintenance programs in Sydney are facing ever-increasing demands, obviously, and have very long wait times for entry. In fact, in Cape Breton, fears of a reduction in service and possible closure of the methadone treatments have children, parents, and drug addiction advocates extremely concerned. So my question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, could the Minister of Health indicate if her department is in touch with Dr. Ali and those responsible for methadone services, and if there are any plans for further support to the methadone programs in Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the staff in the department work very closely with the district health authority staff who are responsible for the delivery of addictions services programs across the province. And it's at the district level very often that the frontline physicians and others that are involved in programs like the methadone maintenance programs are involved. At the provincial level, we kind of set the standards and oversee the implementation of the standards and provide policy support. The actual delivery occurs at the district level, and staff in our department are very active in reviewing the need for methadone around the province, and we will continue to do that, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are certain communities in our province who are in need of GPs and specialists. Chester, Bridgewater, Caledonia, Lunenburg, Mahone Bay, and Yarmouth, just to name a few. Some of these communities are also attempting to recruit specialists. Mr. Speaker, I don't think I need to tell you that health care is very difficult to deliver if you don't have a sufficient pool of GPs and specialists to do so. My question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, despite the fact that we have yet to see a physician resource plan, what role has the Minister personally played in helping communities recruit the physician resources they need?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are nearing the completion of a physician resource plan for the province. Mr. Speaker, there are areas in the province that have been challenged in terms of physician recruitment. We have over 30 foreign-trained doctors working in rural and small urban centres around the province providing health care services. It's one of the programs that the Department of Health and Wellness funds to bring doctors into underserviced and hard-to-service areas. In addition to that, we assist the district health authorities with their recruitment. We have programs that help pay for site visits when they have physicians or people who are potentially physicians coming to their community. We have expanded the residency program for rural practice into the Annapolis Valley, as a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker. So we have a variety of programs and incentives to get physicians into underserviced areas.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we know that those efforts are not making very great strides because we have Chester, Bridgewater, Lunenburg, three vacancies in Tuscott, Argyle, Pubnico, two in Barrington, three family physicians in Digby, Lockport, Yarmouth, also looking for physicians in Annapolis, Royal, Bridgetown, Kentville, and area, Kingston, Greenwood, Middleton, Berwick, and Wolfville, two physicians in Pictou County, and on we go. Over 1 year ago, April the 20th to be exact, the minister announced a successful bid for the development of a physician resource plan. The tender itself had a time frame completion date of 6 months. According to the minister's own press release, final recommendations were to be shared with government in November. We know that the Annapolis Valley District Board received a briefing on the plan in December. Given that it's now April, why hasn't the physician resource plan been shared with Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I remind the Honourable Member that during the estimates, I provided a detailed breakdown of the number of GPs who had come to Nova Scotia in the last year and started to practice here, the number who had left, the number of specialists who had come, the number we have lost. We actually had a net gain in both GPs and specialists. Nova Scotia, by any account, and all independent reports, national reports, lead the country in the number of physicians that we have per capita to the number of people who live in this province. Now, that does not mean we can rest on our laurels. We have the highest numbers of physicians per population, but the distribution of those physicians can be very problematic in that we have shortages and chronic shortages in some areas, difficulty getting physicians into certain parts of the province. But more importantly is the need to plan for the future needs of the population. And the Physician Resource Plan will do exactly that. The Physician Resource Plan, as I indicated, is close to completion. And when it is completed, it will be released, Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Member for King's West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that reminder. Mr. Speaker, this report is supposed to highlight current GP and specialist needs as well as future provincial needs for the next 10 years. It's supposed to align the supply needs for the province with Dalhousie's medical school training. and is supposed to assist in the development of a health care system that provides services equitably across the province. But there are 60,000 Nova Scotians who continue to access emergency rooms for primary care and wait for a family physician. Will the minister please tell Nova Scotians when they can expect to see a physician resource plan and hopefully assist the communities in need?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is the case that, as I indicated, the physician resource plan is close to completion. But I want to remind members that we, in fact, are transforming our health care system into a system that is much more collaborative team-based. And while family doctors, GPs, will remain a cornerstone of the healthcare system, they increasingly are one member of a team that includes nurse practitioners and advanced practice family practice nurses and so forth. And what we are doing is moving to more collaborative care clinics around the province and, in fact, opening the collaborative emergency centres across Nova Scotia, such as we've opened in Parsborough, Spring Hill, with a few more to open quite shortly in Annapolis Royal, in Pugwash, and in Tatamagoush. And these centres utilize doctors, the nurse practitioners, paramedics, licensed practical nurses, a whole number of care providers, and the result will be better care sooner, better chronic disease management, better primary care for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NDP government consistently used job numbers surrounding the shipbuilding contract that are in the tens of thousands of positions. In winning the bid, Irving was able to ensure a measure of growth for our province. The problem is that the NDP communications did not match the realities on the ground, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, exactly how many Nova Scotians does the minister project will find new employment with the Irving shipbuilding contracts?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness. And tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as a result of the Irving bid, the Conference Board of Canada is projecting at the peak of the contract that there will be well over 11,000 jobs in the province of Nova Scotia. We knew that when we were going into the process, Mr. Speaker. We envisioned that within the first couple of years, for the first 2 or 3 years that the Irving shipyard will ramp up, it will be in the vicinity, there will be a constant there of 4,000 jobs, in the vicinity of 4,000 jobs, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and we hear that the minister uses the number 4,000 to 11,000, so the minister often has advised me not to get hung up on job targets, but Mr. Speaker, that sounds an awful lot like a range of jobs that would be created in the Irving shipyard. So I'm not sure which one it is, Mr. Speaker, but anyway, as we stated in the past and will always continue to do so, Irving's success in winning the contract will benefit Nova Scotia and all Nova Scotians. Where the problem exists is that the NDP spin machine doesn't seem to reflect the reality of the jobs that are going to be created. We know that there's a global interest in this contract, Mr. Speaker. There's keen interest from Scotland, from America, and we also know that jobs attached to this contract are being publicly publicized in the Philippines, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table the article that does so. An article in the Philippine Daily Inquirer carries the headline, "Jobs Await Filipino Workers at the Canadian Shipyard," and that is tabled, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the minister, what is the minister not presenting a realistic picture to the people of Nova Scotia surrounding jobs connected to Irving?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, those numbers that I quote come from the Conference Board of Canada. And I will reiterate, at the peak, during the peak of this, fulfilling this contract, there will be over 11,000 jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, now, you know, there's some things that we have no control over. I mean, if Irving is in the private sector, and I'm not going to stand here in this House and comment, criticize on the procedures of Irving Oil. I don't have the detail and the information to do that, Mr. Speaker, and I will not criticize them here in this House.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're certainly not asking the Minister to criticize Irving. We're just asking questions on behalf of the taxpayers who have invested $300 million in this project. So I think it's a fair question. Certainly, Mr. Speaker, shipbuilding is complex work and involves many integrations throughout the process. For the NDP to carelessly overstate job numbers is misleading at best, Mr. Speaker. This contract, which is won fair and square by Irving, will have a positive impact on our economy, which is certainly a great thing for Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians deserve the facts and not spin, and they're just looking for answers on how many jobs are going to be created for the Irving shipbuilding contract. So my question, will the minister tell Nova Scotians what portion of this contract he expects to leave the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you, the member asked a question. I quoted numbers that come from the Conference Board of Canada, Mr. Speaker. Those aren't numbers that were manufactured by this government. Mr. Speaker, I will again, so that the member can understand, is that at the peak years of this contract, there will be over 11,000 jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is the most important event. This is the most important event that's happened in Nova Scotia recent history, and certainly, Mr. Speaker, certainly in my lifetime, Mr. Speaker, this is something that we all should be behind, Mr. Speaker, because I know Nova Scotians support this, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NSCC trains 90% of all apprentices in the province. If this government was really committed to training Nova Scotian workers for Nova Scotian jobs, it would invest in the NSCC. Instead, we learn that the NSCC is facing a budget shortfall of $5.37 million as a result of this government's damaging cuts to post-secondary education. A budget shortfall is not going to address the increased need for training in shipbuilding trades, Mr. Speaker. My question to the minister, will the minister tell members of this House how Nova Scotians are going to get training for Nova Scotian shipbuilding jobs if the NSCC is facing a budget shortfall of $5.37 million?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to remind members of the Chamber that this government has invested over $8 million, new dollars, in trades and training. Much of that is going to be delivered through the community college system. And in addition, there's $250,000 dedicated each year to establish a center for shipbuilding excellence at the Nova Scotia Community College. We understand what a tremendous investment we're going to be able to make to support the shipbuilding procurement contract, and we have a plan, and we're going to be ready. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
I know that the Minister has announced a $2.75 million investment specifically for shipbuilding-related training, but still the NSCC is facing a $5.37 million deficit, Mr. Speaker, as a result of the money cut from their core funding by this government. Will the minister tell members of this House, are the funds committed to shipbuilding-related training to let's try that again, Mr. Speaker. Are the funds committed to shipbuilding-related are they new monies or are they just funds that this government is recycling from shortchanging the NSCC in the first place?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would say it's a combination of new additional funding and also reaffirmation of the core funding that we give to pre-apprenticeship programs through the community college as well. And I just want to remind the Honourable Member that certainly, like all service providers that are publicly funded in this province, we've asked everyone to look at operational efficiencies. And as we are doing within government as well, there's a way to become more efficient in terms of how we deliver programs without impacting necessarily on the programs themselves. So we are trying to improve both the access and the excellence of trades, training and direct access to apprenticeships in this province as well as making sure that everyone reviews what they do, how they do it, and that the money, most money possible, is going to programming. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This government has a knack for renaming money while slashing budgets. We saw it with the Minister of Education when she slashed money to the public education system, and we now see it with this minister cutting the budget and underfunding the NSCC while putting a crowd-pleasing name on money that already exists in the system, Mr. Speaker. Putting a name on a portion of funding does not soften the blow of a $5.37 million budget shortfall, even if there's a photo op attached to it, Mr. Speaker. The 25,000 students at NSCC programs across the province deserve the truth. Will the minister admit that her shipbuilding training announcement was not new funding, it was just window dressing for monies that were already supposed to go to NSCC in the first place?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The province of Nova Scotia is actually giving more money to the Nova Scotia Community College system this year. And we've asked them to reallocate that as much as possible to programming and to look at operational efficiencies. So certainly, they're looking at administration, for example. And so two highly honoured principals of two campuses are retiring, and so the community college has looked at that as an opportunity to have shared administration between two sets of community colleges in this province. So they're being innovative, they're protecting the programming and the students in the classroom, and at the same time, they are looking at operational efficiency. So hats off to the community college. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is to the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, in response to questions about the fiasco her department created at Talbot House and all the good it did in the community, the Minister of Community Services continues to stress that the report was to address organizational issues. The Minister said in this House, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, "Any reference in that review is with respect to the organizational workings of that Board of Directors," end quote, and I will table that, Mr. Speaker. However, the report wandered far into allegations, which has since been thoroughly discounted, that were personal and directed at the former executive director. Not organizational issues, Mr. Speaker, but sinister in nature. So my question to the minister, was the report designed to examine organizational issues, as the minister claims, or just to take on Talbot House on any issues, including personal smears? Which is it?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, if you review the organizational review that we did, if you read it, you would see within that the information is about the organization. And when you do an organizational review, you must talk to individuals to find out whether they are following policies. And that's exactly what it is, and that's as far as it goes.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, during budget estimates on Monday, the Minister described, and might I say in great detail, the way her department conducted their organizational review of Talbot House. She indicated that the way they did the review was to talk to the board of directors and staff, and if necessary, they would talk to the people receiving the services. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister. How many current residents did the minister's department speak with during the course of their review? And if they didn't, why did her department deem it unnecessary?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
As I said before, Mr. Speaker, this entire issue is around an organizational review, and it's focused on the performance and whether they met the standards that were in the service agreement. And in fact, it's that group over there that wants to keep this going and harm the individuals involved. Now, the board of directors, the chair has actually reached out and asked for us to work together, which I, in fact, have said, yes, we would. So if they would stop their foolishness, people would be able to work together.
No. The Honourable Member for Victoria de Lakes on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not even going to bother respond to that accusation. But you think, Mr. Speaker, if a department was doing an organizational review on a facility to see whether or not the programs are being delivered right, what better way to find out than to talk to the residents that are in Talbot House today? Mr. Speaker, some have said that the department purposely did not meet with individual residents of Talbot House, Mr. Speaker. This is because many feel that the department only want to hear bad things about the organization. The mishandling of this situation, Mr. Speaker, is shameful. The minister claims that the review was strictly an organizational review, yet the report shows evidence of an attack on Father Abbas. The minister says she'll work with the board to help Talbot House get back on its feet after she pushed them down, but her department has announced they'll be putting out a request for proposals. So my question to the minister, will the minister apologize today to the board for the gross incompetence and disrespect she has shown them?
The Honourable the Minister of Community Services.
The only disrespect that's been shown to anybody is that group over there trying to create an issue over an organizational review.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this week the Premier announced a panel that's going to review existing studies on the Yarmouth Ferry. I have a real fear that this is another thing where the government is going to deflect responsibility onto another group. That's a sincere fear I have. I hope I'm mistaken. But, Mr. Speaker, for the sake of this question, I'll give this group and this process, the benefit of the doubt. When it comes to the word viability that this group will be looking at, can the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism tell us, are they only looking at the ferry service itself and its ability to make money for its owners, or are they going to look at the economic impact that a government investment will have for the area in a ferry?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
We're going to look at the business case? Is that what you're asking?
Thank you.
For a business?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is the panel. And one of the things that I want to make very, very clear, it is not another study. What it is doing, it's conducting a review. It's going to review all of the information, all of the data that's been put forward by a number of different individuals and organizations. There have been a lot of pros and cons, Mr. Speaker, with respect to the Yarmouth Ferry. This is certainly going to look at the business case. It's going to look at the viability of the ferry, Mr. Speaker. We are heading this panel is going to be guided by a group of experts, ferry experts, Mr. Speaker, from Dalhousie University, and we hope that they will provide everyone with the answers that we all seek, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth and his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the challenge here is that we're on the cusp of another tourism season. Without that vital sea link to the largest tourism market in the world, there's still no timeline on what this panel is going to do or when they're going to complete their work by, and there's no clarification on what the mandate of this group is when it comes to examining the viability. My hope would be that they look at the economic impact that that service has on the tourism sector, on businesses across the province. And there's another challenge, because yesterday the Minister of Economic and Rural Development said there is no money in the provincial budget to support a restored ferry service. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, if the panel does say that an investment in a ferry is needed, where will the money come from?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know very well what I said yesterday, Mr. Speaker, and what I said is that we did not put any money in the budget for something that doesn't exist. And, Mr. Speaker, I will say further is that if, and we don't know what this panel is going to say, but one of the things that I've said repeatedly is that this requires a partnership and involvement by more than just the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we would look for, and do you know what? If we're going to invest in a ferry, we would think that the appropriate partners are going to be there alongside of us, number one. Number two is that there's a solid, viable business case for the installation of a ferry, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
We still don't know what this word viability means or how it's going to be interpreted by the panel. That is a problem. The minister has said there's no money allocated for a restored ferry service. Well, if you're putting a panel in place to look at this, and one of the conclusions that they're going to come up with is either it's not worth it or it is. If they decide that it is, where will the money come from, and how much is this government willing to put into it?
The Honourable Member, Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, a business case is a business case as far as money is concerned, and I don't know why the member doesn't understand. What I've said, and what I've said repeatedly, is that when we look at investments, we look to see who's at the table with us. Mr. Speaker, we've said, we tried with the Yarmouth Ferry to have involvement from the federal government. The federal government said no. Mr. Speaker, we asked we asked the governments in the U.S., would you be involved with funding for the Yarmouth Ferry? Mr. Speaker, they said no.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on a new question.
I really want to continue that last one, but I guess we have to move on. Mr. Speaker, in 2009, once Southwest Nova lost the ferry and the government realized the economic damage that was going to happen, this minister put in place and invested over $500,000 into a Team West and Team Southwest, whose purpose was to reinvigorate the economy of Southwest Nova Scotia. My question is to the Premier, what have they been doing?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Okay, Mr. Speaker.
I'll draw attention to his answers. That's a smart move.
Mr. Speaker, I'll do him a favor and give him to the Minister of ERDT.
Thank you. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has made huge investments in the Southwest region, Mr. Speaker. And I think, in not any way a priority list, but certainly at the top of the list, has to be the $50 million that we invested in Bowater to save thousands of jobs along the Southwest region, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I also would like to mention the investment that we made in things like the 250th anniversary for Yarmouth, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we made an investment in the hockey challenge, the Junior A hockey challenge, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have made numerous investments, Mr. Speaker, in the Southwest region, and we have worked with organizations and individuals in the Southwest regions, which we will continue to do.
Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Okay, just to clarify, my question is specifically with the over $500,000, I think it was $600,000, that went to Team West or Team Southwest. What did those groups do for the economy of southwestern Nova Scotia? Have we seen a report on what the returns to taxpayers were who put money into those things? What's going on? We haven't heard anything from those two groups in 3 years, Mr. Speaker. I'm giving the minister an opportunity to provide this House with a very clear and direct report on the activities of Team West and Team Southwest and to explain to us what happened to that $600,000 that was put into them.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Team West, Team Southwest, all those organizations that were formed in the Southwest region were formed in partnership with ACOA, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Team West, we are awaiting audited reports on just how the money was spent. We do know that there was some money. We do know, Mr. Speaker, that there was some money that was left over from those various initiatives. We know that in some cases we received written requests if that money could be used for other things, and we have denied them. We have track records, and what we don't have records of, Mr. Speaker, we will be receiving them.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
It's a bit disconcerting to me that the Minister doesn't know what these groups did for the economy of southwestern Nova Scotia. They were put in place to help, they received significant funds, and nobody knows what has happened. Will the Minister please table in this House any evidence he has, any data on the work that these groups have done on behalf of the citizens of southwest Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, as Minister, I would be more than pleased to table all information when it becomes available to all members of this House, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I will even go so far as to elaborate on that list, because I will include the $1 million that we invested in RIDE, Mr. Speaker. I will include all those other investments that we made in the Southwest region to enable the Southwest region to be all that it can be, and then some, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are proud of our legacy with respect to the Southwest region.
Order, order, please. Time allotted for all questions put by members has elapsed. I will now recognize the Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would ask that you now call Bill Number 42, the Rural Nova Scotia Physicians Act, for second reading.
Bill Number 42, the Rural Nova Scotia Physicians Act. I will now recognize the Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, pleased to rise in my place today and to debate Bill Number 42, the Rural Nova Scotia Physicians Act. And today I also asked a question of the Minister about the need for family physicians, and especially in rural Nova Scotia. We know that the need is extensive, and I just will start off by, I guess, reiterating